Saturday Miss. We're considering the mess that is called the Ukraine. This article says that Ukraine's position is so dire militarily that the new government, and they don't have a new government, they have an acting government, found the treasury empty when it took over on February 27th. Yes, it's not just empty, it's bankrupt. They owe some $30 billion and have nothing to pay it back, which is why it was so stupid for the United States to authorize the International Monetary Fund, or the World Bank, if you will, to provide $25 billion of new liquidity to the Ukraine. It's the same thing is going to happen. They're going to squander it, and then they're not going to pay it back. And rather than at that point them owing $30 billion, they're going to owe $55 billion. And then what do you do? You don't want to lose $55 billion, so you loan another $55 billion, and you continue to roll it over, ever increasing the liability. Well, the Ministry of Defense was so desperate for money that it went to the public for help. People across the country, and that would be people across the West, they don't know the demographics here of the Ukraine, are pulling together to support the Ukrainian Army fundraising drive. Yes, they're holding bake sales to buy weapons of mass destruction. They're trying to repair the damage done by years of thieving governments. And by the way, it's only had 20 years of thieving governments in the Ukraine. That's how long this failed experiment has lasted. But why would you loan $25 billion to a thieving government? That's a question for the International Monetary Fund and America that sponsors them. Children have held fairs and bake sales, literally, to raise money. Yes, children are holding bake sales to raise money for weapons that kill. Oh, it's a lovely country, isn't it? Adults have delivered food and water to tent encampments, and community groups have collected shoes and clothes and canned goods. Yes, canned goods. Shoes and clothes for your military. The Ukraine's military budget was $5.3 billion, but they can't buy clothes, they can't buy shoes, they can't buy canned goods. According to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute in Sweden. But if you compare that, you would look at Sweden's population, which is a fifth the size of the Ukraine's. It had a budget of $6.5 billion. So we're looking at the fact that Ukraine is not spending enough on their military. They need to spend not $5.3 billion, but at least five times that, $26 billion on their military. So why not add to the $30 billion that the Ukraine is currently in debt and has no means to pay back, and the $25 billion they're in the process of borrowing, $55 billion. Let's add another $26 billion a year to finance their ability to impose their will and to rid the people of their freedoms. Let's support the Ukraine's military with a grand investment of $26 billion a year. Is that the inference? Because, after all, bake sales will only go so far. The Ukrainians have little idea how much of the budget actually reached the military because they're thieving scumbags. The recent investigation found that one defense factory was stealing $81 out of every $100 orders. The Deputy Prime Minister Yarmina said, if the stolen money had been used for modernization of the Ukrainian army, there would not be a problem. Well, there's a problem in the Ukraine because virtually every rock you turn over in this country, what you find is thieves. I mean, skimming is typical. You know, defense contractors skim. Military skim. The scum of politics, which controls both and orchestrates both, they skim. Everybody lines their own pocket. But, you know, in a normal environment of people acting badly, you'd expect them to skim 5%, 10%. I'm not sure I've ever heard of people skimming as much as 20%. But here in the Ukraine, they skim 80%. Why would the United States send its elected officials, send its military, send its CIA, send its State Department to proclaim that we are standing with these deadbeats, with these thieves, with these anti-Semites? Why do we think that us adopting them is going to be in our interest? This should be somebody else's burden. Speaking of a burden, this dateline is from Chibok, Nigeria, the Associated Press. And it's, before I read this article, I'm going to tell you about the 234 girls that are missing, abducted by fundamentalist Muslims. I thought there was something in the range of 70 protesters that were ultimately killed by the Ukrainian police when the protesters became violent, when they started shooting, when they started kidnapping police, when they started using Molotov cocktails and they threatened to kill government leaders in Kiev. I think it was some 70 that were killed. And the United States has risked World War III on behalf of these thugs. But in Nigeria, thousands of little girls, little boys, have been savaged by fundamentalist Muslims trying to impose Sharia law. And we don't say a peep. We don't go and say we stand with Nigerians. We don't offer them $25 billion in aid. We don't do any of these things. We don't rally NATO forces to defend the lives of innocent people in Nigeria. It tells you that morally we're bankrupt as a nation. We're pure hypocrites. Anyway, here's the story. Some 234 girls are missing from the northeast Nigerian school that was attacked last week by Islamic extremists. No, it was not attacked by Islamic extremists. It was attacked by Islamic fundamentalists. And there is a real difference between the two. Significantly more than 85... More than the 85 reported by the educational officials, the parents told the state governor on Monday. The higher figure came out a week after the kidnappings when the Boko state governor insisted a military escort take them to the town. Parents told the governor that the officials would not listen to them, and they drew up their list of names of missing children, and it reached a total of 234. In other words, Boko Haram, the fundamentalist Islamic terrorist organization that wants to impose Sharia law in Nigeria, is so belligerent, so predictable, so vicious, that to transport a busload of little girls, the parents and the school district and the state governor all recognized that it was necessary to have an armed escort. Because this is a religion so vile that they would look at little girls as pawns to be abused. The Borno State Education Commission, Musa Inuo Kubo, said that the principal of the Chibok government's school's girls' secondary school had initially said that 129 science students were at the school to write a physics exam when the abductors struck. Now, the abductors were fundamentalist Muslims. After midnight, 28 pupils escaped from their captors between Tuesday and Friday. Then another 16 were found to be day scholars who had returned to their homes. That left 85 missing, according to school officials, but now we know that the number is three times that. The kidnappings are believed to have been carried out by Nigeria's Islamic extremist rebels. Boy, let's just tie a bunch of things together. We're going to say Islamic extremist rebels. No, they're Islamic fundamentalist jihadist. Jihadist is a Quranic term that speaks of those who fight in Allah's cause. And fundamentalist indicates that they are Salaf, and using the Quranic term, which is that they adhere to the words and deeds of Muhammad and the first Muslims. And of course, Muhammad and the first Muslims were ruthless terrorists. They did these same kinds of things. Boko Haram, which is basically means that Western educational is harmful, is un-Islamic, is violently campaigning to establish Islamic Sharia law in Nigeria, whose 170 million people are about half Muslim and half Christian. Boko Haram has been abducting girls and young women in attacks on schools, villages, and towns, but last week's mass kidnapping is unprecedented in numbers. The extremists, the fundamentalists, use the young women as porters, as cooks, and as sex slaves, according to the Nigerian officials. Yes, you can be fighting for imposing Islamic law. You can be devoted to Sharia law, and you can participate in kidnapping, because that's legal in Islamic law, Sharia law. You can engage in armed conflict targeting civilians as a terrorist, and be a devotee of Sharia law, because it's condoned in Sharia law. You can use little girls as sex slaves, as a proponent and advocate for Sharia law, because Sharia law condones such things. Now, if you can't see the connection between the advocates of Sharia law and kidnapping little girls, terrorizing a community, and using little girls as sex slaves, there's something desperately wrong with your ability to think. And since Sharia law is based entirely upon Muhammad and his words and deeds, when a moron like the President of the United States praises Islam, then we have no one to blame but ourselves for our own demise as a nation. These are really serious connections that need to be explained, to be exposed. This says that Boko Haram was on the rampage, staging four attacks in 3 days that began with a massive explosion during rush hour in a busy bus station, which killed 75 people and mutilated 141 others. Murder, mayhem, mutilation, and sex slaves, the stuff of Islam. There are a couple of other stories that present the attack on the girls' dormitory. And so I did want to share them with you. Abuja, Nigeria, this is from CNN. The heavily armed militants stormed the girls' dormitory in the middle of the night, hurting some 100 or more students into vehicles and burning down nearby buildings as they made their escape. That was a week ago Monday. No one knows where they are. And surprising still, no one's particularly shocked. Quote, all the community are sympathizing with the parents, Principal Asabe Kumbura told CNN. But she said the people in the villages are not surprised. Tucked away near the border with the Cameroon, with phone services cut off and travel strongly discouraged, this poor corner of Nigeria is no stranger to such brazen, violent acts. For 11 months, the provinces of Borno, Yobe, and Amanwa have been under a state of emergency due to relentless assaults. This has blamed on Boko Haram. Why not tell the truth, CNN? Perpetrated by Boko Haram. The Islamist militant group has bombed churches and mosques, kidnapped women and children, and assassinated politicians and religious leaders. The Islamist militant group has bombed churches and mosques, kidnapped women and children, and assassinated politicians and religious leaders. I read that twice. Because I wanted you to know what the advocates, the proponents of Sharia law, do with their free time. Those who are the living embodiments of Sharia law, of fundamentalist Islam, of Islam as it was conceived. The best Muslims on the planet bomb churches and mosques. They kidnap women and children. They assassinate politicians and religious leaders. Oh, and let's be clear, they also rape little girls. Boko Haram, whose name means Western education is a sin, in the local Hausa language, says it wants to impose a stricter enforcement of Sharia law across Africa's most populous nation. So, why is it that there isn't a journalist on the planet that can make the connection between these two things? Between those who are advocates of Sharia law and those who kidnap and rape little girls. Those who murder and maim by the hundreds of innocent civilians. The group has gone about its, this says, misguided mission with such depressing regularity that residents have become somewhat numb. They can say misguided mission directly after a sentence says that they're seeking to impose Sharia law. By the way, there isn't a stricter form of Sharia law. That's why they said just stricter enforcement of Sharia law. There's only one Sharia law. It's the based on the words and deeds of Muhammad, as they're recorded in the Hadith and to some degree the Quran. So if they have a misguided mission, what's misguided is trying to impose Sharia law. Why don't they say so? The UN's Middle East peace envoy. This is an amazing story that came out of Israel. It just shows you how jaundiced, how disgusting the United Nations is. The UN's Middle East peace envoy has criticized Israeli authorities for allegedly preventing him from reaching an Easter ritual in Jerusalem. Now, why in the world would a secular organization, the UN's chief, be doing participating in a religious ritual? That's question number one. And how did the Israeli authorities prevent him from doing so when they allow all those who wish to participate in such stupidity do their thing? This religious ritual was, by the way, this miraculous fire that is just a pile of lies again. They claim that every year at this time of Easter, that there is a fire that miraculously appears in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and that they then wave their torches of this fire around, not only in the churches, but in the squares and throughout Jerusalem. And so you have an extraordinarily dangerous situation. Large crowds of people waving torches, stampeding. And all the Israelis are interested in doing is keeping them from killing themselves and burning down the city. And so they try to control the flow of people. And yet Robert Sperry had a conniption fit. It was unacceptable behavior. So here's Robert Sperry, the UN's Middle East peace envoy, complete ignoramus and hypocrite, criticizing Israeli authorities, calling the delay that he encountered to trying to join a mob of torch-wielding religious zealots unacceptable behavior. And he said all parties need to respect the right of religious freedom. Does he recognize that he was going into an area controlled by Muslims? Where the Temple Mount, the single most important place for Jews in the world, is occupied by Muslims, that there's two Islamic buildings built on top of it, and that Muslims won't even allow a Jew to step on the site, and that the Jews allow Muslims to be citizens of their countries, that they allow Jews to build mosques in their country, that the Jews allow Christians to celebrate whatever they want, whenever they want. And this hypocrite is telling the Jews that they need to respect the right of religious freedom? What a moron. Israel said it was a micro incident and questioned Mr. Sperry's judgment. Yeah, as would I. Here's another story on the same event. Thousands of Orthodox Christians flooded to Jerusalem's Old City on Saturday for the annual lighting of the Holy Fire. Now, of course, they claim that this Holy Fire was spontaneously generated from the Sepulchre, which is in the wrong place, by the way. It's now on Mount Moriah. But they have to now light it on their own. You've got a little help, you know, after all. The massive Easter event, and it's not massive, a few thousand people, that mostly unfolded smoothly, although there were reports of Israeli police officers creating barriers for some Palestinian Christians who were seeking to attend together with a group of high-ranking diplomats. It was trying to control the flow of people. Robert Sperry, the United Nations Special Coordinator for Middle East Peace Process, in other words, a Muslim advocate and anti-Semite, said that he and several other diplomats who had joined with Palestinian Christians, who now represent, by the way, less than 0.2% of the population of Arabs in that region, and they were once as much as a third. We're in a procession to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which was built on the hill where Christians believe Jesus was crucified and buried before rising from the dead. Here is a secular newspaper saying this is where Christians believe. Now, my guess is that apart from Roman Catholics, there are very few Christians that believe such a thing. There was no Jesus. He was put in a tomb, but his body did not rise from the dead. Nonetheless, it goes on to say, despite early assurances of unhindered access to the church for Saturday of light ceremonies, Sperry was said in a statement, Israeli police refused to allow the group entry. That's not true. They delayed entry because of people pressing in through the narrow streets and the narrow corridors into the narrow squares as a mob. The precarious standoff ensued, ending an angry crowd, as an angry crowd was pushing their way through. Sperry, that has nothing to do with the Jews. The crowd is angry. And it's not having anything to do with the Jews. It's the nature of these Christians. They're belligerent. They were pushing. People could have been stampeded. The envoy and his party were trapped for about 30 minutes, not by the Israeli police, but by the crowd. And eventually police gave way. And the crowd of anxious worshippers were able to enter. Unruly and angry was probably the better depiction, but anxious worshipers was the view that was promoted by the anti-Semite of the United Nations. Another story reads, thousands of Christian pilgrims took part in the Holy Fire ceremony at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. This was, by the way, on Saturday. This was... Should they actually have been doing what God had wanted, even forgetting the fact that their calendar is no longer synced and, in fact, purposely just joined from Yahweh, the day before Bukudim, before the reunification of spirit and soul, they ought to have been celebrating matzah, but instead they're out playing with fire. Mr. Sperry said that he was held up at a checkpoint along with other diplomats. He told Reuters News Agency that he might have been trampled had it not been for the fact he was eventually allowed to pass. And who would have trampled him? Fellow Christian ignoramuses trying to play with fire? It really became dangerous because there was a big crowd and I was pushed against a metal fence and the police that the police had put up and the crowd tried to push against the fence really hard. So here are the police trying to do a reasonable thing, trying to control the flow of individuals so that there's not a stampede, and the UN chief is blaming those who were trying to do the right thing while trying to exonerate those who were out of control. It wasn't something you'd associate with a peaceful procession for Easter, the anti-Semites declared. The Israeli foreign ministry spokesman said Mr. Seri had displayed a serious problem of judgment, and that any attempts to limit access were carried out for safety reasons. Spokesperson Yagal Palmore praised the dedicated work of the Jerusalem Police Department. A foreign ministry statement said, had any harm come to the pilgrims due to the uncontrolled crowd movements, Mr. Seri would have been prompt to cast responsibility on the same police he now wishes to condemn for doing their job properly. Wow. I love it when somebody in a responsible position will hold an ignoramus like the UN peace envoy accountable for his stupidity, his hypocrisy. Good for Israel. The holy fire is an ancient tradition considered a miracle occurring every year on the holy Saturday, the day before the pagan celebration of Easter Sunday. Worshippers say the fire appears from Jesus' tomb inside the church to show that he has not forgotten his followers. Of course, it's all a pile of lies. The ancient church is believed to be built on the site of his crucifixion, burial, and resurrection, none of which is true. Keeping with tradition, the church was unlocked by a Muslim family which has held the keys for centuries. Isn't that a nice little vignette? Seri expressed dismay at the incident and called all parties to respect their right of religious freedom, granting access to holy sites for worshippers of all faith, and restraining from provocations, not the least of which during the religious holidays. But he didn't say anything to expose and condemn the Muslims who preclude a person of any faith. Here I was as an agnostic in Israel. I wanted to go to the Temple Mount as an agnostic. I was precluded from doing so. I had two Christians in my party. They were precluded from doing so. I had two rabbinical Jews in my party. They were prevented from doing so. And so this hypocrite doesn't want to tell the truth, that Muslims prevent people from exercising their freedom during any time of the year and during all of the year, over the most important site in the world. And for a little crowd control, this anti-Semite, Seri of the United Nations, would condemn Israel? Any wonder why Israel doesn't get a fair shake in any human organization, including the United Nations, especially the United Nations? Meanwhile, back in Rome, this article says, Pope Francis called on Catholics to spread the message of God to the very ends of the earth. Actually, their message is anti-God. They even preclude the use of Yahweh's name in any of their services. He called on Catholics to recover the fire which Jesus has kindled in the world and to bring that fire to all people. Yahusha didn't kindle the fire. His body was kindled in a fire. Something that they don't want to acknowledge. But he didn't kindle the fire. He was addressing followers at an Easter vigil mass in St. Peter's Basilica, which, of course, was formerly a pagan shrine. The Catholic Church's main Easter mass was celebrated, of course, on Easter Sunday, which they say is the holiest day on the church's calendar, which tells you that it is a pagan institution because there is no legitimacy whatsoever for an Easter Sunday celebration apart from the religions that were born and bred in Babylon, in Egypt, in Greece, and imperial and pagan Rome. There is something dreadfully wrong with Christianity. And by announcing that Easter is their holiest day, they're admitting that they are hopelessly corrupt and in wholesale opposition to God. Speaking of being corrupt, following Pope Francis on Twitter, according to Roman Catholics, can buy you less time in purgatory, atone for your sins, according to a papal court in the Vatican. So, rather than relying on matzah as the means to have your sins atoned, Yes, now following Pope Francis on Twitter will cause your sins to be atoned. Yeah, if you're a Roman Catholic, that's their promise, that there's that just following your Pope on Twitter will atone for your souls. Yeah, it's a new form of an indulgence, according to the Vatican. Now, mind you, of course, there is no purgatory anywhere mentioned in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, but there was a purgatory in the pagan mythology of Rome, in the pagan mythology of the Greeks, in the pagan mythology of the Egyptians and the Babylonians. Yeah, it's another pagan lie that has been usurped into the religion of Christianity. And, of course, there's nothing that was more despicable about Roman Catholicism than their indulgences. But, nonetheless, they continue. Catholics are offered, quote-unquote, indulgences to reduce the time Catholics believe they will spend in purgatory after they have confessed their sins, so long as they follow the Pope on Twitter. The Vatican's sacred apostolic penitentiary, a court which handles the forgiveness of sins, not Yahweh, mind you, said the following, even though rites and pious exercises of the event on television, radio, and through social media, according to a report in The Guardian. Follow the Pope on Twitter. It is so amazing that the Roman Catholic Church would make such an announcement, and that it would be an unofficial vote by the Committee of Roman Catholics that is responsible for salvation, for providing for atonement for one's sins. Yes, they have a special committee that oversees such actions. That the Catholics would claim that by following the Pope on Twitter, you would get an indulgence and therefore spend less time in purgatory. It is just astounding that they would say such a thing, and that there would be Catholics after they said such a thing. But that's how stupid, moronic, idiotic, just overwhelmingly dumb the followers of religion are, and particularly, in this case, Roman Catholics. Now, there was a clarification on following the Pope on Twitter. Yes, the Roman Catholic Church wanted you to know that you must be following the events live. It's not as if you can get an indulgence by chatting on the Internet, the Vatican source told newspapers. Father Christopher Jameson, the coordinator for English and Welsh pilgrims at the World Youth Day, said it was right that those who are watching the Pope online, as well as in person, would receive indulgences. Yes, just watching this man. Oh, that qualifies for forgiveness. So, in fact, it's a special kind of forgiveness, an indulgence. They not only said it, they believe it. And they not only believe it, those who it was communicated to swallowed the poison. Is there any wonder that God hates religion? Speaking of religion, the new top 10 terrorist list is out. I'm going to let you guess if Islam had a monopoly or not. Okay. Top 10 terrorists in the world. Do you think that they were equally divided between the world's population and therefore between two and three of them were Muslims? If you thought that, you'd be wrong. Do you think that Muslims might have represented twice the number of people that they represent in the world's population and therefore there were five Muslims among the top 10 world's terrorists? Well, if you thought that Muslims were twice as likely to be terrorists, you'd be wrong. Okay, let's say that Muslims were a majority of the top 10 terrorists, and that Islam was three times more likely to motivate a person to be a terrorist than any other doctrine, and therefore you guessed that there would have been seven or eight Muslims on the top 10 list. No, you'd be wrong. But if you were one of those that said, monopoly, Yahtzee. We have a bingo here that Islam represented 10 of the top 10 terrorists on the world's list. You'd have been right. I wonder if we could make a connection. Do you think we could use evidence and reason to make the distinction between the world's most wanted terrorists and the religion of Islam have a complete monopoly? President Barack Obama is not one that could make that kind of a connection, but here's one of the statements that he made the other day. He said, the common thread of humanity that connects us all, not just Christians and Jews, but Muslims and Hindus and Sikhs, is our shared commitment to love our neighbor as ourselves, end quote. So the common thread of humanity isn't the fact that we all share carbon as our base. It isn't the fact that we share common DNA. It isn't that we're all upright creatures with opposable thumbs to our fingers and our hands. It's not that we all have two eyes, two ears, a nose, and a mouth. Nope. It's not that we all occupy a singular planet. Nah. It's that Christians and Jews, by the way, as if a Jew is the name of a religion. I mean, these are religions, right? Christian is a religion. Muslim is a religion. Hindu is a religion. Sikh is a religion. Talking about religious affinity here. But then Jews, which is a race, all of a sudden is assumed to be religious. The man couldn't say Judaism. Not just Christians and the practitioners of Judaism, but Muslims, Hindus, and Sikhs. Why are Jews automatically considered to be of engaging in the Jewish religion? And we'll consider his citation in a moment, because it's also untrue.